following is a presentation of KSL Sports. Hello, Cougar Nation.
Hand off middle. First down. Touchdown! And listen to the Cougar Nation.
Every Monday night, we break down the Cougars' last game, the coaches and players, and look ahead to next week. Here's BYU insider Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte on Utah's legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon, Cougar Nation. Welcome on into Cougar Nation, your show here on KSL News Radio. Mitch Harper with you. Also joining me, as always, every single week, Matt Biamonte. We're the host of this show and Cougar Sports Saturday, every single Saturday from noon to 3. And yes, we are here in this afternoon spot because BYU basketball is going to take over the airwaves at 6 o'clock tonight as they get ready to tip off the season against Houston Christian. Typically, this show is from 6 to 7 on Mondays, but we're doing a matinee special for you today, and it's an important one because there is so much to unpack, Matt, from what took place in Morgantown, West Virginia, as the Cougars fall 37-7. We got to be here for Cougar Nation.
We're going to be real. We're not going to mince words. That was an ugly loss, and we're going to break it down with the truth, man. It's sometimes after a game like this, you have to be real. We're going to be real today.
And let's get real right away in the takeaways.
Cougar Nation, takeaways. Mitch and Matt analyze BYU's last week of play and what it means for the next week.
Let's get real with it, Matt. 37-7, BYU falls to the Mountaineers in Morgantown. I got to say, Morgantown was one of my favorite venues so far in the Big 12 travels. I thought the setup was awesome. I thought the fans, the clash of cultures was pretty cool. But then the game happened and everything went south after that as BYU just gets destroyed in every phase of the game. And as we dive into the takeaways, we got to start things off with the offensive line. And, well, that group, as Kalani said, they whiffed quite a bit.
Just felt like there was just too many whiffs, just unblocked guys.
Your thoughts, Matt, on the offensive line in takeaway number one.
It was their worst performance of the season, Mitch. There were too many times that, especially in pass blocking, that they did not even get a hand on a defensive lineman for West Virginia. One play in particular was really alarming to me. It was right after the Keelan Marion kickoff return touchdown was called back. It's 3rd and 6, and Retzlaff is like immediately flushed out of the pocket, and I think he gets sacked on the play. And you go back and you look at the replay, they only rushed 4 guys, and yet it felt like an all-out blitz. It just, man, this offensive line has regressed so badly this year, and this was the culmination where they couldn't run the football again. But then the pass block, which has been pretty solid for most of the year, that looked bad as well. It was just an abysmal performance by this offensive line.
Starting guard Paul Miley was out for the game. He's dealing with an injury. He was questionable last week against Texas, but ended up playing. He was out this week, and Caleb Etienne stepped in. And look, I will admit, I was high on the addition of Caleb Etienne, and it has been everything but successful for BYU. It's been very difficult to where a lot of those whiffs that Kalani's referring to are tied to Caleb Etienne. And I think some of the whiffs also tie to Daryl Funk. We'll get to that a little bit later as well here in our takeaway segment. But also, on a positive note, I think takeaway number two, Jake Retzlaff, he showed flashes that he can play at a high level at the quarterback position. This was Kalani on Jake Retzlaff in his first career start replacing an injured Keaton Slovis.
He battled, he played hard, he threw the ball with great velocity and accuracy, and then there's sometimes, I mean, it's his first game starting. I thought he made a couple mistakes, but the effort was there and the energy, and he never quit.
How'd you feel about Retzlaff, Matt?
He was one of the lone bright spots in this game. I thought that he played really well. I think Kalani summed it up nicely. There was great velocity, there was good accuracy. He seemed poised. He was in control. I felt like, man, if the play calling was just a little bit better, if it was more passing and less running, maybe things could have been a little different, because I thought Retzlaff was really impressive. So, look, I need to see more to feel comfortable about him being QB1 next year, but this was a great debut. I came away very impressed.
Retzlaff also showed an ability to be mobile and get out of the pocket and scramble. This was him on his ability to run the football.
I consider myself a passer, and I run to pass for the most part, but I'm also not going to leave yards right in front of me, so I'm going to go get them most of the time. But when I break the pocket, my eyes are still up a lot of the time, and I'm just trying to steal something from the defense. You know, I think we did that a couple times, and then, you know, when you got to turn and put your head down and run, you got to turn and put your head down and run and take the yards in front of you if they lock it up on the back end.
Matt, I really like the pace that Jake Retzlaff played at. I felt like there was quick decisions. He got the ball out of his hand quick. I felt that there was good decision-making from Jake, and he didn't turn the ball over, too. I just think that there was a lot to like about what he did in that game, even though it was a 37-7 blowout, and it was rough in so many phases. I thought he was one of the few bright spots, as you noted. So I agree with you there, and I think Jake has done enough, in my opinion, to feel like he maybe should be the starter the rest of the way. And I hesitate sometimes to say that because I do think Keenan Slovis is a good quarterback. I do. But it's also a case of there's only three guaranteed games left, and then Keaton's gone. And you got to know what you're going to do in 2024, because the last thing you want to have, if you're BYU, is a blank canvas going into 2024. Because if you're faced with a losing season this year with a quarterback that had 30-plus career starts under his belt coming into the season, how is it going to get better next year? And, oh, by the way, your rival's joining the league next year, so the pressure's going to ramp up even more. You got to get some continuity at that quarterback position, and Jake Retzlaff could potentially give BYU that.
And he's also healthy, too. Like, he played well enough to make it easy for the coaches where if Slovis is not 100%, you don't even consider it because you know that this guy can move the ball down the field. He can make good decisions. And here's the other thing. He was fun to watch, wasn't he? All the different angles, just the you know, not to beat a dead horse here, but the quick decisions, the velocity on the throws. Like, it was a lot of fun to watch him play the quarterback position. I'm really hoping he gets the start against Iowa State because I want to see what he can do at home. Hopefully, you know, with Cougar Nation behind him, maybe it'll be a different outcome against Iowa State. But, yeah, everything you said I'm on board with. And it's a good point because you gain nothing next year by playing Slovis anymore. Whereas if you play Retzlaff and he becomes the guy, then you have direction going into the second year in the Big 12.
Kalani Sitake is addressing the media right now. We'll have a full recap of that on KSLSports.com. But one of the questions that has to be tossed Kalani's way is takeaway number three. The coaches on this staff have to be evaluated, and that includes Kalani Sitake, but him as the head coach, he's got to look hard. He's got to look at this offensive staff, Matt, because Aaron Roderick, he's getting his seat a little bit hotter with these performances. Only one touchdown in the last two games. That's not going to win you many ball games in the Big 12 Conference, but I think the seat that's the hottest right now is Darryl Funk, the offensive line coach for BYU. The way that BYU's offensive line has played since Jeff Grimes left has regressed. It's regressed. It's regressed. It's feeling like the first time Jeff Grimes left when he was on Gary Crowan's staff and then the early part of the Bronco years. And then he leaves, and there was like almost a decade-long gap of poor play on the offensive line. BYU can't afford to have that happen. If Darryl Funk's not the answer, you got to move on, and you got to figure out something else because this coaching staff on the offensive side, they have regressed so much this year. I feel like there's talent on the offensive side of the ball personnel-wise. The staff, for whatever reason, they are struggling to figure out an identity for this group.
The thing that's been so discouraging to me on the offense side of the football, we've been talking about it for weeks on Cougar Nation, Mitch, is when are they going to try something else? I feel like, yes, this week there was Jake Retzlaff at quarterback and things did look a little different, but the play calling and the scheme seemed the same. Like, when is there going to be a radical change to just see if we can find some kind of mojo? Maybe it's complete no huddle. Maybe it's a lot more passing, which I thought the short passing worked a lot better against West Virginia. There just wasn't enough of it in key situations. When is that going to change? That's been the most frustrating thing, is it just feels like, well, this is what we installed in fall camp, and this is who we are, so we're going to go down with the ship. No, let's try and do something else to maybe help this struggling offensive line. Maybe we can help the run game by doing less of it, and so it becomes a little less predictable. every week I feel like I'm waiting to see something different, and I keep seeing the same thing every single week.
The saving grace for Aaron Roderick right now, and I mentioned this on the Cougar Tracks podcast, he has been outstanding in identifying and developing quarterbacks. And even on Saturday night, the way that Jake Retzlaff played, a guy that was a relatively obscure recruit, yes, he was number one on ESPN's JUCO quarterback list, but he was relatively obscure. Like, it was Coastal Carolina and Troy, as he told us back in January, that was recruiting him. No one was looking at him, yet Aaron Roderick finds him, and he might be a pretty good quarterback. So that has given Aaron Roderick, I think, a little bit of a leash and a little bit of leniency to, like, navigate through these tough times. But position coaches, if they're not performing, you know, there's got to be some evaluations and tough evaluations, or else if there's no changes, then Kalani's saying it's fine, and then the attention goes to him, and he enters year two in the Big 12 with a scorching hot seat, whereas you better get to a bowl and maybe more, or else your job might be on the line there. So we got to take a break. Cougar Nation is brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth, fee-only fiduciaries who help you live within your meaning. It's Blue Barn Wealth. com. Taking the time out, we'll give out some helmet stickers. Yes, there were some to dish out in that 37-7 loss at West Virginia. You can also text us 57500. Get on board on the KSL text line. We'll be back with more Cougar Nation. Stay with us.
Cougar Nation.
A 75-yard touchdown run down the far sideline.
Every Monday at 6 on KSL News Radio.
Cougar Nation, welcome back into our recap of West Virginia and BYU. We normally do this at 6. We're doing it here in the noon hour because BYU basketball starts their inaugural season of hoops in the Big 12 tonight. You can hear that game here on KSL News Radio. So right now we're doing the recap of West Virginia and BYU. It was an ugly game, not a lot of positives. I think we did manage to find a few here in our helmet stickers.
Cougar Nation, helmet stickers. Mitch and Matt dish out the stickers for BYU's best players this week.
There's always some positives to find. Even Kalani Sitake said that in the Morgantown Milan Puskar Stadium visitor locker room. He said there's some positives to find, and there are. And I think mine has to start off with QB1, Jake Retzlaff, who gets the start over Keaton Slovis, because Keaton Slovis was banged up. And I think the elephant in the room with all that, you know, is Keaton actually hurt? I think Keaton is definitely hurt. The shoulder, the elbow, it's all banged up. You know, if they didn't have trust in Retzlaff, do they sit out Slovis? Maybe it's a Jaren Hall 2.0 situation, kind of like with Conover. But I think at the same time, they're trying to think of Slovis, keep him healthy. Won't help his NFL stock by going into that buzzsaw this past weekend. So Jake Retzlaff gets the helmet sticker for me. We went over it in the first segment. If you missed any of that, go check out the podcast feed. But I just thought Retzlaff was calm. He was collected. And I just thought he took a nice step forward to saying, hey, I can be your quarterback one next year in the Big 12. You don't need to dip into the portal. I'm in the building already. And that was just a nice kind of moment for him, and seeing his family embrace him after the game. It was just kind of a rare bright spot in a game that didn't have many in throughout the football game.
The moment wasn't too big for him. No. Everything you said is spot on, and his top target is my first helmet sticker. Keelan Marion, 6 receptions, was targeted 12 times. I thought he looked good. He had injuries to Darius Lassiter. Cody Epps left early. Chase Roberts left for a little bit. I thought Keelan Marion was really solid, kind of showcased his ability as someone who could be a reliable target going forward. So Keelan Marion, for me, a solid performance in an expanded role.
I'll admit, Matt, I couldn't find any more. Once you took Keelan Marion, I was like, okay, I'm tapped out after Retzlaff and Marion. I'm not giving anything to the defense after a 300 rush yard performance from West Virginia. So, you know, I'm just going to give a helmet sticker too. It's Big 12 football. I love Big 12 football. I love it. I'm enjoying the weekly battles every single week. I host First and 12 with Alex Keery on Sundays, 10 to noon. Shameless plug here on KSL News Radio. I just think Big 12 football is just putting BYU to the test and showing them that, hey, there's no more get-right games anymore. And you know what? I kind of enjoy it, Matt, because it is going to challenge BYU this offseason. Whether they get to a bowl game or not this year, they are going to be challenged this offseason to level up even more when it comes to financial resources, commitment, the aggressiveness in the recruiting trail, the aggressiveness in the portal. It has to level up. And I think they're getting a reality check of how tough this league is. I think a lot of Cougar fans slept on this league feeling like, oh, these logos on the helmets aren't that good. They're not that tough. It's a lot of like what we saw in the schedule matrix announced last week, and Utah fans on social media are saying, well, we're going to just dog walk this league in the Big 12 because they're looking at the logos. We don't know anything about these 2024 rosters yet, and everyone's saying Utah's just going to step in and win the Big 12. This league is a lot tougher than anyone realized, and myself included. I've been very impressed with the talent in this conference. It's been a joy to watch. Helmet sticker to the Big 12.
I considered giving my final helmet sticker to Max Tooley.
Okay.
But to your point, the defense was just – this was the worst defensive performance of the year. You almost give up 600 yards of offense. Yeah. At no point do you ever show that you can stop the run in this game. I know they're banged up. I totally get that. But this was not the Texas performance.
It looked a lot like last year's defense, quite frankly.
Yes. Well said, Mitch. It felt light years different from what we saw a week ago in Austin. So this is a bit of a reach, but I'm going to give it to Chase Roberts. I thought the helmet sticker is purely just from that dude is tough. Yeah. Like, he took a major shot and he could have easily said, we're not in this game. I'm banged up. I'm not going to play. For him to come back in, make a couple catches, battle through, fight for his teammates, that really impressed me. So helmet sticker to Chase just for being a warrior, because that could not have been an easy game to play in. It was physical. West Virginia was much more physical than BYU. For Roberts to come back in, I was really impressed by that.
I was floored that Chase Roberts was back. Cody Epps, he obviously left the field. He was in protocols. He was gone after the first half. Another setback for Cody. Tough deal for him. I mean, he just can't get right this year at all. It's just been a lost year for Cody Epps. But Chase Roberts somehow miraculously getting back on the field, because that hit, Matt, I was scared. I thought, oh no, this is one of those moments where you think Keenan Ellis type scary hit, where is he going to be okay? That's where my mind kind of wandered when I saw that hit live in the press box, and to think that he actually got back in the game and played, remarkable stuff. And I think it speaks to how tough, as you said, that Chase Roberts truly is. Cougar Nation brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth. You can subscribe to this podcast, the show, on podcast feeds everywhere you get your podcasts, and on KSLSports.com and the KSL Sports app, news, traffic, and weather. And then we'll talk about what's trending up and what's trending down with this BYU football team as they get ready for Iowa State this week. Let's talk about it next here on Cougar Nation on KSL News Radio.
Cougar Nation.
Touchdown, Cougars take the lead.
Every Monday at 6 on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back in, Cougar Nation. Hope all of you are having a fantastic Monday afternoon, enjoying some lunch with us, Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, as we unpack what happened at West Virginia. Country roads, take me home. Kalani didn't realize, Matt, that West Virginia plays country roads after a win. So when Kalani said, I can't wait to hear country roads, it's like, Kalani, no! They play it after wins. They say, cue country roads. Well, it was pretty cool to experience, I got to say, but I wish I would have rather not heard it. And
that was
never
that
experienced
turned out to be
that.
Prophetic by Kalani earlier in the week, huh?
Yeah, he called it, and that's why West Virginia put it in their hype video. Can't wait to hear country roads. Country roads, take me home. Well, John Denver is not going to be mentioned in trending up, trending down for this segment here on Cougar Nation, but let's unpack what is trending in BYU football right now.
Cougar Nation, trending. What's trending up and what's trending down this football season?
Go ahead, Matt, and start us off. What's trending up for you after this 37-7 setback against the Mountaineers?
Hey, one thing we can all agree on is that the rest of this month is going to be interesting. It's going to it's going to be a lot more fun than a higher winning season in the independent era where you're playing nobody at this time of the season. Like Iowa State, this game this Saturday, in my eyes, Mitch, the bowl eligible opportunity, it is this Saturday. You get it done this week, or I don't think it's happening. And that's fun. But after that, senior night, Oklahoma comes to town. Then you go to Oklahoma State. That's awesome. So November football to me is trending up, even though you just lost by 30 and that was not a lot of fun out in Morgantown. There's still meaningful football left to be played. There's still a lot on the line. Like the last game of the year, Mitch, you could be fighting for bowl eligibility and you could be looking to keep Oklahoma State out of the Big 12 championship game. Like that's going to be pretty cool if it comes down to that, even though it'll be stressful. November football is a lot more fun in the Big 12.
That's a great point, and I think it's one of the reasons that this coaching staff and the players are so confident that they're going to stay unified despite this two-game losing streak. This was Jake Retzlaff on the unity of the team.
I'll tell you what, I think this team's got a lot of great unity to it. I think that these guys really love each other. I think that we have something special here. I think two losses in a row hurts. There's no doubt about that. But I think we're pretty good at having the mindset that we're definitely going to look at this tape hard and fix the mistakes that we made.
I could say that that might be my trending up, the unity aspect, because I don't think it's just player speak or coach speak. I do kind of buy into that, Matt, but at the same time, these performances the past couple weeks, you got to execute. And it's nice to say we got the greatest fan base that's showing up on the road. We got, you know, this great culture in the locker room, but you do got to perform at a high level. And so I'm not going to go to that well for the trending up. I will say this. I was kind of hard on this aspect of the game last week on social media and some of my analysis pieces on KSLSports.com. But the kick return game, I think, is trending up, Matt. I was kind of concerned in that first half. Keelan Marion was not fair catching kicks. And he's having BYU start possessions on the 15, where if he just simply fair caught the ball, it's at the 25. But then in the second half, he pops off that touchdown, which should have been a touchdown. I thought it was ridiculous that that was overturned. I think you're going to get to that. But I'm going to say the kick return game. Keelan Marion is running with some confidence. I do like the aggressiveness that he does and the confidence that he is showing. But at the same time, you got to be smart because every yard matters in a game where you're going to be an underdog every single week.
Trending down for me, and to piggyback off what you said, that was one of, I don't know, four or five just completely egregious calls in this game. And look, make no mistake, I am not blaming this loss on the refs. There's no scenario in which BYU wins this game. They were outclassed at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football. They were never going to win this football game the way it unfolded. With that being said, there were so many horrific calls that my trending down is Big 12 officiating. I could not believe it. Like the Isaiah Glasker holding on that kick return, his hands were inside the pads. And as the kick returner, which was Marion, runs by him, he releases him. I don't know how he gets called for a holding there, considering in the first half, there was a pass intended for Chase Robertson, which he literally got tackled 20 yards down the field and does not draw a penalty, even though there were three PI calls prior to that. And then the two calls that really bothered me the most, where I just felt like these officials, I'm not going to say they're biased, but gosh, they're horrible, were both of the unnecessary roughness on Garrett Green when they were literally mid-tackle when Green was starting his slide. I'm like, you can't protect the quarterback in that situation because he's trying to pick up too many yards and then get bailed out by a slide. It just, I'm glad that the Robinson targeting was overturned because that would have been unbelievable. But my goodness, that officiating was horrible. And the sad thing is too, Mitch, let's say Marion's touchdown does count. Does that give BYU a little momentum to where they still lose? Don't get me wrong, they still lose. But maybe it's 37-17 and there's a little different feel than getting completely blown out. I thought the officials were absolute. I don't want to curse here on the radio, but you might get the gist here.
Yeah, the 20 penalties were called. I mean, how many football games do you watch where 20 penalties were called in a game? It was just so poor that the refs made their presence felt in a game. My trending down is BYU's chances at a bowl game. It's tough, folks. Iowa State this Saturday, 8:15 kick. BYU's nearly a double-digit underdog at home. Think about that. Iowa State, who had all those losses, personnel to the gambling scandal, they're going to roll into Provo as a 7-point to 10-point favorite against BYU in Provo. I would have never in my wildest dreams thought that scenario. The chances are slim, are getting slim, Matt, and BYU's got to find a way to pull off one win in these final three. We got to take a break, though. Cougar Nation is brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth, fee-only fiduciaries who help you live within your meaning, bluebarnwealth.com. Taking our final break, we'll get to some of your commentary on the text line, 57500, and preview BYU versus Iowa State right here on Cougar Nation. And it's powered by KSL Sports.
Cougar Nation.
The Cougars picked it up! And in overtime, they won it!
Every Monday at 6 on KSL News Radio.
Cougar Nation, however and wherever you've listened today, we appreciate you at an unusual time. We normally do this 6 to 7, taking your calls. But because BYU basketball is kicking off their inaugural season in the Big 12, and that game can be heard right here at KSL News Radio, our Cougar Nation recap of West Virginia. It's been here in this noon hour, and of course, it's brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth. Right now, Mitch, we've kind of broken down the game a little bit in a couple different areas. One thing that is – I want to get your thoughts on this too, but one thing that has been so disappointing this year at this stage in the season is the mistakes. You mentioned the 10 penalties, some false starts in there that were costly on drives that – had some promise. Here's what Kalani had to say about those mistakes.
We're so late in the season and we're still making mistakes. And then fundamentally, we're not playing well with fundamentals. We're not blocking right. We're whiffing on blocks. We're not tackling well. We're not using the right proper technique. We're playing missed assignment football, and that's something that we've got to fix, and that's what I got to get done.
This has been such a weird year, Matt, and I'm glad you bring up that clip with Kalani on the mistakes, because when you think about this season, BYU's 5-4, they're 2-4 in Big 12 action. Is there a game that you come away from, maybe other than maybe Arkansas, but even the flow of that game, there hasn't been a clean game where you said BYU was just awesome for that full 60 minutes of football? And look, it doesn't happen often that you have a wire-to-wire game like BYU-Navy in the COVID year where you're just awesome from the get-go. But it's just been a strange season where – there are stretches of these games where BYU is always down in a hole. They're always having to dig themselves out, and then they just pile the mistakes on top of each other. And you just go, can this group maintain continuity at all? Because I'm really wondering that, and maybe that's just the identity of this team in 2023.
There hasn't even been a game like last year at Boise State. Like,
good point.
That was a pretty consistent game from start to finish. We haven't seen anything like that this year, and I think there's a few reasons for that. Maybe the transfer portal turnover is a bigger deal than we ever knew. Because you look at like a TCU, Mitch, and you're like, oh, you're just bringing all these dudes, and yeah, you get to the national championship game. Maybe that is the exception and not the norm, because you're bringing in so many new pieces and learning a whole bunch of new things. That could play a role. It has been disappointing this year that it doesn't feel like from week one against Sam Houston to now that they have been trending in an upward direction. It's been this weird up and down, peaks, valleys, and it's just hard, I think, to be a bowl-eligible team when you're not trending in an upward direction like we have this year. And look, there's not a lot of opportunities left. Like, yeah, Iowa State's going to be tough. Oklahoma's going to be tough. Oklahoma State's going to be near impossible at the end of the year. Yeah. It all falls on this Saturday, Mitch. This is the game. The time slot is in your favor. It's at home. The weather's going to be a little chilly. You have to get it done this Saturday.
And it's a game, too, where BYU needs leaders to rise up and to take ownership of this program this week and get everyone right to not have a third consecutive loss. This was BYU safety Ethan Slade after the West Virginia loss, on who the leaders are on that defense.
We got A.J. Vonkmachonk on the defense, Tyler Batty. Those are the two guys that I look up to a lot. And then on the offense, you got Aiden Robbins. And then we got Cody Epps. He's dealing with injuries right now, but he's definitely been a leader this whole time.
Ethan Slade's been a stud, both on the field, and I know he's had some moments in that game Saturday where, you know, maybe some missed assignments, but I've also been impressed with a walk-on dude going to the mic after tough losses and facing the music. Props to him. for Ethan Slade, and also giving great answers. I thought that was pretty cool that he shouted out some of his teammates as leaders. So they need those guys to step up in a big way, because you noted this Iowa State team, they're pretty good. 5-4, same record as BYU, but a far different feel around their 5-4 compared to BYU's. Matt Campbell has one of the youngest football teams in the Big 12, and if they can get to a bowl game in a year where they had so much controversy, man, that would be quite the move for Matt Campbell and his program to get kind of back on track, because the youth move that they've got at Iowa State, it's kind of similar to when they had Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, when they were very young and they took some lumps, but man, they started to build some continuity and then they became a force in the Big 12. That could be the case. They got a good quarterback in Rocco Becht, who's a freshman. He's been really good this season, and he's going to be challenging, and they got one of the best defenses in the Big 12 Conference. So BYU will have their hands full against the Cyclones.
Matt Campbell's a dang good coach, man.
He is.
And this is the type of week where, look, there's a lot of scrutiny on the coaching staff, and rightfully so, especially offensively, because they have been downright horrible at points this year. This is a game where they need to show we can make adjustments. Like, we still have the ability to be a good offense like we've shown in the past. Maybe you go 2 minute. I still believe they need to throw the football a lot more, especially if Retzlaff is the starting quarterback. Like, this is a game where I think at the end of it, depending on what happens, we're going to feel like, okay, Kalani and the staff, they're figuring some things out. Or we're going to look at it and say, geez, the coaching gap between the Matt Campbells and what we have at BYU is bigger than we thought. Hopefully it's the former and not the latter, Mitch.
It's going to be an interesting game. It's the first time in nearly 50 years that BYU and Iowa State are going to square off on the gridiron. Iowa State's one of the few programs that is undefeated against BYU. They're along the likes of Florida State, LSU. Well, LSU's only played BYU once, but there's not many programs that can say they've played BYU at least twice and are a perfect undefeated record against BYU. Iowa State all time is 4-0 against BYU. They'll look to go to 5-0 against BYU, and BYU's going to look to end that drought. And I think one thing, though, Matt, and I know it's not the most riveting analysis, but I will say there's something to BYU playing at home. They are 2-0 in Big 12 play in Provo. And I know it wasn't the best teams, Texas Tech and Cincinnati. Cincinnati's winless. But this is a different football team at home than they've been on the road. And, you know, Cougar Stadium, when we were growing up, and I call it Cougar Stadium because that's what it was when we were growing up as kids, but now Lavelle Edwards Stadium, it is a rocking atmosphere, man. The marketing team at BYU, Cosmo, they get the fans in a frenzy. And at night, it just goes off the rails. I think Cougar Nation's going to be on point for this game. I think they're going to honestly try to be that 12th man in this game, and I think they need it. I think BYU needs every possible edge they can get to win this ball game.
They absolutely need it. And this is a game, too, where BYU fans, don't be fair weather. Get to the game if you have tickets. And show your loyalty. Like, on the road, it's been impressive, Cougar Nation coming out on the road for these Big 12 games. They have to continue to do it at home. Like, they need to have a big home field advantage. This team clearly feeds off it. Hopefully the last two losses have not discouraged Cougar Nation from getting out Saturday night and getting behind BYU.
We will have you covered on Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday begins at noon, from noon to 3, and then we will take over extended pregame at 6 o'clock. We will get you ready for BYU and Iowa State as the Cougars welcome the Cyclones for the first time since the 1970s. To Provo. Lavelle Edwards Stadium is going to look a little bit different to the Cyclone fans that were maybe in Provo back in the 70s. It's going to look a little different than what it was back then. So we will talk to you on Saturday. We'll have coverage throughout the week on KSLSports.com and listen to BYU basketball tonight here on your legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio.